For April the 28th, 2023, we talk about Crab Champions, Shardpunk Verminfall, the Young Horses Free Range Collection, and much more. Welcome to Level 455. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Ben.
Hey, thanks for taking me back.
Yeah.
I told you guys we should have checked the body.
Taking you back after committing the unforgivable sin of handing your spot over to Jala when she asked to be on the show, which is a really nice thing to do.
I don't know if I mentioned this before, but there's a chess club I go to on Tuesday nights if we're not recording.
Oh.
And so that's what I do if I'm not here. And they're equally fun.
Nice. Well, I mean,
I feel like that's kind of a backhanded compliment to us. Like,
it is less
we're,
fun.
We're as fun as a chess.
No, I'm sorry. Like, I like chess.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Understand chess.
I like you guys, but you know, reading books just
look, guys. It was a compliment from my perspective. I swear.
I know.
This had better be a strip chess club.
I agree with David. I've never gotten chess. Like, my dad taught me the rules when I was super young, but like, I've never operated on that on that level. Never played well, you know, even like against really drunk people. It's just it's just a thing. It's not the kind of smart that I am.
It is a very pure game, you know, like there's no randomness. It's just kind of how far you can look down decision trees. Yeah. The other person.
But I feel like, couldn't I just have a AI play for me?
Dude, tangent. I've been doing coding interviews the past week, and I went to ChatGPT and asked them the same questions that I was interviewed with, and it answered like way quicker than I did. And I was very saddened after that.
Oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, not gonna lie, that's something I worry about a great deal.
Yeah.
ChatGPT, king of bullshitting.
Yeah. I think what it is if you ask like non-interview questions, it starts to get tripped up and like will lie to you. But if it's like common, because I assume that's like scraping the internet somehow with the data it has. So,
oh yeah, 100%.
Oh, dude, what can we ask ChatGPT what it feels is its greatest weakness?
Sure,
I need this now.
It relies.
I told you about having that discussion with a coworker, right?
No, what's this?
I had a coworker ask me, you know, if we were doing some interviewing, if I felt that, you know, tell me your greatest weakness was a good interview question. And I said I thought it was a great interview question because it gauged one of the most important, you know, skills, which is how good the candidate is at lying.
What you have to do is ask the proper question is what would the other guy say your greatest weakness is? That way they can figure out who's lying. Ben pasted in a little response to what is your greatest weakness. As an artificial intelligence language model, I don't have emotions or feelings like humans do, so I don't have a quote weakness in the traditional sense. Yeah, this is all. It is so easy to spot the cadence of these things from like a mile away.
So I feel like, though, again, though, well, what you suggested actually worked here, because the way you get around that bullshit is you say, like, oh, what would your grandma say your greatest weakness is?
Oh, yeah. No, just you can trick it into saying racist stuff by saying, like, what would an old Southern man say about
have you seen? Yeah, no, apparently people are mad because ChatGPT is not doing that anymore.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole thing, diffusing the nuclear bomb. I really don't want to talk.
I can't make the robot be racist.
So the RNC has released a AI-generated attack ad against Biden.
No fun.
No.
I don't want to talk about AI anymore. Hey Ben, what you been doing? What you been doing this past week besides playing chess?
Something equally disturbing is I saw the movie Beau is Afraid, and it it is not for everybody. It is very surrealistic, but it is very entertaining if you're into art house movies. So
that's the new Ari Aster where Joaquin Phoenix plays every role. Is that correct?
He plays a couple roles, but it's not a situation from last year.
It's not an Eddie Murphy in the Clumps situation.
But yeah, and it is surprisingly very funny as well. So,
His movies can be funny, and I've always asserted a strong link between good horror and good comedy. They require similar instincts.
Yeah, this one is. It's not horror this time. Like, because he's kind of, even though he made like one of the best horror movies ever, like he's kind of not trying to pigeonhole himself as a horror movie. Like, he doesn't see Midsommar as a horror movie, more of like a breakup movie, which is interesting. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, that's a movie is all I have. I went and saw the D&D movie. We're going to be talking about it on Adaptation Decay. It's good.
So amazing.
Yeah.
I was actually kind of surprised at how fun it was. It's weird. You know, these Forgotten Realms things that I read in like late middle school, having that stuff pop up on screen. I don't know.
Did I make the joke here about how many of their just incidental like travel sets look like basic land cards?
You did. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's neat. It's a really good looking movie. It genuine laughs out of me. To the point where I felt out of place because there were like five people in the theater. I went at like 11 a.m. on a Friday because that's how I roll. But like I was the only person like laughing at a bunch of stuff. And it's like, come on, you guys, stop making me feel like an asshole. Laugh.
Have fun.
Yeah. So good time. But that's really all I have besides work and family stuff. Oh, David, how about you?
So this past weekend was the local comic book convention. So I went to that with some friends. So that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
The headliner was Shatner was there.
Okay.
However,
I
did not get to see him, unfortunately. However, I did get to meet. I don't know comic books, but a whole bunch of like old like comic book like old Marvel editors and story writers and stuff like that, and I'm not at the place where I can where like I know who these people are, you know, I don't have that type of thing, but I can still, you know, kind of enjoy the stories. Someone asked him about, because a bunch of them were editors, like, what was the like weirdest thing that you had to veto that someone wanted to put in a comic? And that's interesting. Talk about someone wanted to like rip off one of Spider-Man's arms. And then one of the guys is like, yeah, probably the biggest thing I didn't veto in my time as an editor was killing Gwen Stacy.
Oh, Well, that's kind of important.
And then he ran from the room.
No.
Yeah. Talked about apparently the writer like couldn't go to cons for several years.
Oh, no.
Geez.
So, yeah. So that was a lot of fun. Did some cosplay. I posted in our chat. I basically previewed what I'm going to be wearing to Ren Faire this year. Other than that, I'm just trying to, appreciate that, this week, on the podcast, we all have, something that, Tucker Carlson does not, an audience.
True. Yeah.
So, that's my, affirmation for the week.
Yeah. That made enough of a splash that even my mom sent me a screen grab of the news alert. So
nice.
Yeah. So, you know, there was that. she doesn't even like him. It was just, you know, she was just like, hey, I know this will make you happy. I was, I was in the car. I was driving to Columbus. it was like, oh yeah, here's this. I had no idea that it happened. She was the first person who broke the news. And I was like, oh, that'll serve me well at sea.
Yes.
So were you driving your car now?
No, still driving the rental. Oh, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. It's currently in the middle of being getting the estimate. I called yesterday and they said it was like it's still in disassembly. Like they were trying to put the estimate together. I should have an idea of a timeline when they call me with the actual estimate. I'm resigned. I am going to hand over the rental on the 2nd of May and then borrow my parents' car like a chump. So
Like someone who can rely on family in times of trouble.
Like somebody with an active social support network that will absorb all these misfortunes that I suffer, and I should be incredibly grateful. But I'll still be driving my mom's car around like a chump.
I think you should just be like a hardcore biker guy, like. You know, spandex, everything, and
I got my bike. I'm afraid to take it on the road, like out of my neighborhood and onto the roads because I can't find a helmet big enough for my head. I've talked about this before. I'm sensitive about it. Dennis, how about you?
I've had a good week. This week was my middle kid Milo's 7th birthday. So we did a birthday party at a local park shelter, invited all his friends from class, and he wanted it to be Minecraft themed.
Okay.
And so we found online like a shit ton of blow up Minecraft swords.
Oh, yes. God.
It's just, you know, like a little like the clapper things that you have in the football stadium, only vaguely shaped like a sword with a Minecraft print.
Uh-huh.
And man, to watch 20 first graders beat the shit out of each other with a balloon sword.
I thought they stopped after 12th grade.
Oh yeah. it was a joy. And there were,
I got that joke.
Thank you. It sounded like you said 21st graders, not 21st graders. Sorry.
I am having PTSD flashbacks to the great Minecraft sword war of a couple days ago.
Oh, so yeah.
I missed that one.
my dearest Constance, it is brother against brother.
Oh yeah, Luke was running around dual wielding. You know it's a good party when like the old lady who's power walking past it is like making gesticulations to the effect of like, is anyone going to take care of these kids?
They'll sort themselves. They'll take care of each other. It's fine.
that's where I like nod at her and hide my sword behind the back.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun.
I mean, pending litigation, you may not be able to answer this. Did anybody get hurt, or was it a good time had by all?
No, a good time was had by all, miraculously. And it was also next to a creek. And there was a significant portion where everyone was skipping stones / you know, just chucking rocks into the creek. So the fact that no one got hurt is really a miracle.
Nice.
Thinking back on it, we did a bad job planning that.
I don't know. That sounds like the best job to me.
Yeah, it was a good time.
A lot of my favorite times as a kid were, I think, gauged by how close I was to a creek at the moment, except for that one really bad time.
We don't go cricket anymore. Not after the accident.
not after old Drifter Joe. We found him. Come on. Well, that's cool. That's
have to say, we don't go cricket is the most Midwest thing you've ever seen it said.
Oh man. Nice. Well, that's a really good idea for a birthday party. I think a really good idea for an episode would be the regular kind, where we talk about games in the in the grind, and then the multiplayer, and then the end boss, and we can get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben,
hey,
gonna go to you first.
Can I interject?
Sure. And
just real quick aside, dude, with segues like that, you could totally pick up chicks in your mom's car.
Probably be the only way.
Wait, now you're riding on a segue?
I would pick up more chicks than I would on a segue, yes.
Also, I love this response someone posted for, you know, how interview questions for getting on the level.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One of the challenges of being an AI language model is that my responses can sometimes be too detached from human experiences. Nah, I'm on here.
Yeah, it's funny because you can see the, like, copy-pasted parts from the generic response. Didn't mean to bomb with that. Yeah, didn't.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry.
Anyway, you were throwing to Ben, I believe.
I was throwing to Ben. Ben, what have you been playing over the past, let's say, period of time or so?
Yeah, I got two new ones. I'll start with the more boring one first. I picked up another VR game. I picked up Moss and Moss 2, which are the second one. Moss 2 came out, I think, more recently, and that was more highly regarded. It's been given like kind of like 9 out of 10s or so from things that I've read.
Hold on. The sequel came out more recently.
Substantially more recently. Because of VR timelines.
The sequel came out in the past few months. The first one came out, I think, for the original PlayStation VR,
and that was like back in 2014, 2015, something like that.
I also got that joke.
I got the joke. Like, it technically was a weird thing to say, but I understood it more in the sense of what the way Ben was saying it.
You interpreted it as a human instead of an AI model. I might be outing myself here.
God, is everybody? Not again.
Cole, you stated that you didn't want to talk about AI anymore, thus guaranteeing it will be woven throughout the rest of this episode.
Jeez. Okay. Well, glad that's how this works. Moss, you play an itty bitty mouse going around dioramas, right?
You play as a mouse.
Yeah, Moss the mouse.
Moss in the crick?
I don't. Oh my god. Show's spiraling. You can buy them both as a bundle, so that's why I picked up both of them. And I more wanted to play the sequel since that's more highly regarded, but I figured I'd play the first one just so I had context. It wasn't missing out on anything. So I'm maybe like an hour or two through it, maybe two or three. It's basically it has this like fantasy lore where it's like, you know, like the mouse has a destiny. You are a reader, which is a silent ghost that is like overwatching the mouse and helping it out is like the idea of the game. And that's
so if it moves from cover, you take a shot at it.
Dude, this is not like DMZ. They haven't gotten that far yet.
Like XCOM.
Yeah. It's more just like puzzle-based things, and it's like kind of physics-based puzzles to some extent, where you can interact with certain parts of the environment, like lift gates, stuff like that, turn switches, things happen, that sort of thing. It's okay. It's like, it's nothing to write home about, I guess. I think honestly, the thing that I've been most impressed by is there's like a hub world that takes place in this giant cathedral that reminds me of Anor Londor from Dark Souls, and it's just like, man, they should make a game out of that. Like, if you could just like walk around Anor Londor, that would be sweet.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I've most been impressed by, which is maybe a little bit of damnation by faint praise, but I don't know if I would. Yeah. So it's just like a puzzle game. Nothing much beyond that. I don't think I have too much more to say about it.
It's one of my favorite kinds of VR that you really don't see happen an awful lot. So much about it is, so much VR is going for being immersive, like you are the thing. Whereas Moss being you are watching something, you know, like literally, like I said before, these are dioramas, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. And affecting the world as opposed to directly controlling the thing. That is really interesting to me.
Yeah, I will say a unique mechanic of it is like in these dioramas, like they kind of set it up in a way where it's like if you lean in a certain direction, you can kind of see more of the scene because they have kind of like Easter eggs scattered throughout the maps that you can sometimes get to and pick up. They're basically like the puzzle pieces in like Braid or something like that. Yeah. But it does have you kind of like leaning over as you're playing to try and see like every corner of the diorama, which is interesting. Not many games have done that as well.
Did you ever play Astro Boy?
I have not. I think that's only for the original PSVR.
Yeah,
They haven't updated it yet.
Nope.
Yeah.
Because that was did that a ton, where just there are all these little secrets and elements that you were kind of ducking and looking around to do. So if you liked Moss and Moss 2, that's probably your next stop.
Yeah.
Assuming you can find it.
Astrobot Rescue Mission is rad as hell. It's wild that there is not a PSVR 2 port. It's wild that it hasn't come to PC, honestly.
I like the one for the PS5, even though it's like completely different genre, I guess, but it's a very polished game.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a little Nintendo platformer, kind of.
Yeah. All right, let's get down to brass tacks. I want to talk about the other game I've been playing. The other game I've been playing is called Crab Champions. This is a game that's in early access. This is a game that's made... Have you guys ever heard of the... It's like Crab Dance video on YouTube?
Yeah.
It's like a meme. You know what I'm talking about?
It's like you with a reaction gif of like a gif of celebration, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just a bunch of crabs dancing on a beach. There's a lot of them. So that was made by a person in Unreal Engine, the crab video. And this same person decided to make a crab-based video game in the Unreal Engine. This is basically Risk for Rain, but you're a crab.
I didn't know I needed a crab action hero in my life until now.
Yeah.
Crab battle.
I think it's like $10 maybe. If you got friends to play it with, I'd say it's worth the ride, especially right now because it's still like jank and early access. So it gets to the point where you can like break the game if you collect enough things. Like there's, you know, yeah, I love games that allow you to break the game, like literally break the process of that is running the game.
Yeah.
See Baba is you, see Risk of Rain early access. That
you
sort
don't
of
mean
thing.
Like crash the game, break the game.
That's what
he means.
Throw so many objects on screen that it can no
I
longer render the game.
I tried to throw you a lifeline.
Yeah. No.
Sure.
Intentionally.
Melt your CPU to slag with Baba as you.
Yeah. Anyway, so that kind of can happen with this game where, the basic loop of the game is, you're in a given biome. I think you have maybe like 10 stages. It's like 4 battles a shop, 3 battles a shop, and then there's boss fights here and there. And then, so you go through that and then you go to another biome. There's 3 different biomes per a quote unquote run. And then at the end of each 3 biomes, you can either start back at the beginning with your current setup, but the enemies are harder. Or you can just celebrate and like check out, and then which is fine. You like you're collecting keys along the way. I think you keep the keys no matter what. So I'm not sure what the advantages of checking out or like celebrating. I guess it's just like a stopping point to be like, hey, I'm done. But what you can do is like after in each stage that you're doing a battle, there's 2 types. There's either waves where it's just they throw enemies at you and you have to survive a minute. And the other one is just an arena where it's like you have to kill every enemy and then it's over. Whenever it ends, you're given a treasure chest. You open it up. There's 3 different upgrades. You pick one of them. It's like a random roll. So sometimes you can roll like higher rarity items and they like are more powerful. But it literally like allows you to start breaking the game after you've done this enough, because like you can get upgrades where there's always one more item that you can see out of a chest. And there's not a cap to that. So like, I think I'll share a picture later, but there's a picture of like 20 items, like, stacked out, like from a single chest, draw. And you can increase the probability of getting better items in them. And then you can, there's a perk called like faulty chest where it does, after you pick one, all the remaining items stay there and you can still keep picking them. And there's just a chance that they'll go away. So it quickly becomes the case that you can just break this game and get like infinite money, infinite power-ups. And then what it gets to at that point is it's a fight against your computer in the game where it's hard to like turn, because when you start firing, you're shooting so many projectiles and it's killing things so quickly. However, you need to be pointed towards the things that you're shooting at. But there's too much on screen that it's really hard to like move and face the enemies. So it is possible to get killed in the later levels just because you don't see them coming and you can't turn to face them. So that's an interesting emergent mechanic of the game.
Yeah.
But Yeah, but this is a lot of fun to play with multiplayer as well. It does need some kind of updates to kind of polish the experience, because it is very 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 much favors competition amongst the people you're playing with and not cooperation. Okay. So it's like when you get to the shop, when one person buys an item, it's their item. Like, nobody else can buy it. Mm-hmm. There's like money stones in the back of the shop. When the first person breaks it and they get it, they're the ones who get it. No one else gets it. And so there's a lot of like this mad dashing to try and get yours first before someone else does. But yeah, so some of those things could probably be improved upon, but again, it's early access, so you can't really judge it too harshly.
I was going to say, polish seems to run counter to the value proposition here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so maybe not polish, but better, like a few better game design tweaks here or there. The other thing is they have like a pretty good weapon variability. So you're collecting keys as you do runs, and every three keys that you get will unlock a new weapon. And there's like maybe 10 different weapons that they have. So there's like, it's similar to like kind of like Resident Evil almost, where it's like, here's like the auto pistol. Here's like dual pistols. Here's like a shotgun. Here's dual shotguns, that sort of thing. Here's a rocket launcher. And then after that, keys still have a value after you've unlocked everything, where you can turn in three keys for a new perk, like a starting perk when you start your run. And the platforming itself is kind of interesting. The maps are pretty cool. Each map's kind of like an island of some sort. So I guess the first biome's like island, second biome's ice, third biome is lava, like fire, but essentially the island biome, but just with lava instead of water. But there's like kind of like secrets on some of the levels. There's random chests that'll be on the map in these hard to get to locations. So it kind of rewards you for like checking the corners and exploring.
Anyway. So I want to know about the melee attacks. Are there melee attacks, and do you use your pincers?
Yes. So the F key is melee. The G key is grenade. And there are upgrades for both those abilities in addition to shooting. So there's like upgrades that give you a better range of your melee, or there's a lot of different upgrades for your grenades that you can use. I have not gotten as well versed in using those as I have just shooting stuff and getting perks around that. But in the higher difficulties, you kind of have to be proficient with everything. So, kind of a fun emergent mechanic is when you're playing multiplayer, is if everyone dies and there's one person left, they have to kill everyone, like in the arena, and everyone will respawn and get a chest. But if they don't, then the run's over. So there's this like pressure where it's like, you're the last one alive. You're the last one alive. Like, people will be telling you this. And it's like, all right, better not fuck up here. But it's a good time. It's very wacky, and it's fun early access shenanigans right now. So
it's a shame the meme has locked them into needing to use crabs, because if they were going to make a shooter, pistol shrimp would be much better fit.
Oh, God.
I take
my money.
I mean, what if the crab is dual wielding pistol shrimp?
That feels like a labor violation.
I think this developer is a crab first design oriented. So
they promise a crab first experience.
Yeah.
I mean, we will all eventually evolve into crabs. So
carcinization. Look it up.
Since he made the original video in Unity, I wonder if he just like already had these assets like locked and loaded and it's just like, yep.
No, I mean, a non-pun answer to this or response, like, this feels much better thought out than a meme game ought to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's slap some crabs on Risk of Rain and you're good to go.
Let them ride. Nice. Crab champions. Who'd have thought? I'm going to go and do mine, because I mean, going from jank to jank. So
jank recognized jank, baby.
It does. Just today, the studio behind Octodad and Bugsnax, a studio called Young Horses, has released a jam thing is probably the wrong way to say it. They've put out something that they're calling the Free Range Collection. They put out four kind of like small little, just kind of stunt games that their studio, the people working there, had kind of created it while they were not making Octodad and Bugsax, just kind of their experiments that they've been making. So it's these four little trifles. Like I got to them all in about a half hour, you know, but so and all of them are themed around animals, of course. But
crabs?
No crabs. No,
sorry,
crabs.
Not interested.
There is something called snake date.
Oh, I'm interested.
Yeah. Where you are a snake in a bar and you've got something called, oh gosh, I forget what it's called, what the name of the app is. Sniffer or something like that. Charmer. There we go. Snake Charmer, right? It's a club that is full of horses, and you'll get a little ding on your phone and you will accept the date or not. You accept it and it lays out like how many points you're going to get. You're a snake where you start in the center, but it plays a little bit like Snake Rules where you get longer as you move. So you're just kind of trailing yourself around. And the idea is you need to find the horse in the club and then encircle that horse as many times as the little indicator says in order to get the points and then move on to the next one. So it's kind of like that PS3 game that the creator of Katamari made, Nobi Nobi Boy, a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, where you're playing the monster that got longer and longer in this little open world kind of thing. But it is just a snake going around with the worst physics, overlapping itself and, you know, flipping and flopping around as it tries to encircle horses. Yeah.
And so presumably the horses signed up for this dating app.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, that's definitely someone's fetish.
Oh yeah. Oh, I mean, if
a whole section of it. Yeah.
And if it wasn't before, now it might be.
I think I understand the games that this company makes now is just somebody's fetish.
Yeah. No,
that was going to be the publisher name, but two on the nose. So
somebody, yeah. Bugsnax has some pretty gnarly like transformation stuff. Octodad, any number of things going on there. You know, tentacles, obviously, but also chicken booification. Oh man. But I mean, like it's kind of, at least from the Octodad point of it, like their entire thing has been goofy physics games, like literally, like I don't want to call them gimmicks, but it's like goofy physics stunts kind of things. Mm-hmm. One of them that they put out, this feels a little bit like cheating, but it's also fun to see, is Octodad Student Edition. And I was playing and I was like, this is a pretty good like emulation of what a student game would be, right? It's like they did a student game remake of Octodad. No, this is just what they made, like what these people made when they were students before the studio was even a studio. So you get to see
that.
All of these are free, by the way, right?
Is this on itch.io or?
Oh, it's Steam. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll plop something into the chat here so it's easier to find. They don't make it easy to find right now.
Yeah, I was just looking at their Steam page and they do not have it listed as one of their games.
Yeah, you got to go to like a developer page, like I don't know, young horses, free range. The other two have to do with ants. There is Independant and Ant Ambassador. Independent,
I approve.
Independent is a little bit like I didn't have a lot of fun with that one just because it's pretty clear that it is an Unreal Engine 5 just kind of like monkeying around. It's like
now you're just being a pedant.
it wasn't as physics stunty. You're playing an ant who has gotten loose from the like your colony has gotten loose from the ant farm, and you're going around trying to gather up Cheerios, which they give another name, and use them to trade with the wild ants who are living in the house there. And it's Unreal Engine 5 graphics, and then the main thing you do is like pick stuff up and throw it, but otherwise it just kind of plays like a physics platformer kind of thing. 3D physics platformer. Wasn't as charmed by that as I was by Ant Ambassador. This is a very short game. You are playing as a hand where one finger has a little top hat on it and a little smiley face on it. And the game progresses from right to left as you are controlling this hand, and the finger just kind of dangles limply. And you have to like proceed along this medieval ant kingdom, doing little quests that happen to pop up along the way that are based around the physics of this limp finger that you only have the ability to either let dangle, or when you press the button, it'll do like a, it'll curl up, you know, kind of deal. So like to pull switches and stuff. But like, you've got to do these quests with these incredibly janky physics, without crushing the ants, except until you get to a duel where the ant challenges you to a fight for your honor, because you're trying to marry into the kingdom of ants to seal a blood pact between, the hands and the ants. Then you have to crush the ant.
And is that as easy as it sounds?
Oh, it's pretty easy, yeah. But it is like super short, incredibly goofy, but almost exactly what I want, again, from physics-based little stunt game from a studio that makes physics-based stunt games about animals. It's incredibly funny and worth the free and the 10 minutes it will take you to play it.
Very cool.
Yeah. So like, I ran through those pretty quick, but like each of them is fucking nothing, but they are fun in the sense of joke games, you know? And like, I don't know, I would pay $5-$10 for a 3-hour ambassador experience, you know? Maybe they explored that idea as much as they could. You know,
but tell me about the Ambassadorverse.
I want to solve more puzzles like this. Maybe there could be, you know, little different interactions, but like, it's super goofy and cool.
Nice. Yes. I mean, that is their wheelhouse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I was real excited to see that those kind of came across, and I was like, I bet you I could play those on the day they come out and talk about them on the level. And I did, because the only other thing I had to talk about was Crisis Core, but I've said everything that I need to say about that. I beat it. Boy, is that a prequel to Final Fantasy VII.
Were you able to play Resident Evil on Saturday, by the way?
I was, yeah. Right. My internet was a dick on Friday. Yes.
Did you ever beat Sorry We're Open or whatever?
No, I'm going to go back to it and finish it up. I, you know, the week's off for travel and then
RE4. Oh, yeah. I forgot that synced up that way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all I got. Any questions about the free range label collection?
Maybe repeat how to find it on Steam, since it is hard to find.
What I would say is the easiest one to remember is just go onto Steam and do a search for Snake Date, all one word, and then click on the on the page there. Click on the Young Horses Free Range and the developer, and then you'll see a list of all four of them. And maybe they will have gotten their shit together by the time you hear this, and it'll be easier to search.
No, I don't want to play these games if they got their shit together. I'm here for the jank.
I think the jank will be untouched. It will not be affected by discoverability.
I just immediately saw the word naked in Snake Date.
Oh,
yeah, no, it is right in there. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's me. Let's see here. David, how about you?
Yeah, so I've actually got a new one. I picked up Shardpunk Verminfall.
What? Bless you.
Yes, exactly. So this is basically what you would get if you mashed up Vermintide, Darkest Dungeon, maybe a little bit of FTL, and XCOM. So the idea is that a group of a vast horde of rat people has overrun humanity and has breached the defenses of the capital city, and you have to get this automaton to the I guess the Capitol building or something. So, you know, kind of in a FTL type thing, you know, you've got a map, and I think in this case you can only go forward, but kind of the story can see is you're trying to stay ahead of the horde.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you go node to node. Yeah.
Right, exactly. But, you know, the actual combat is XCOM style, you know, turn-based, you know, half cover, full cover, Overwatch, you know, all that shit.
Okay.
The only thing is when you, it's, I guess you could also throw in a little bit of Left 4 Dead, because what you're trying to do is basically each map, each node of, you know, the overworld map, you are trying to get to the next bunker, which, you know, sort of works like the, you know, in between bunkers in Left 4 Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're doing that, you know, you're taking damage. You're also taking stress damage. Huh. And, you know, based on like the first time you see an enemy, or if you suffer a critical hit, or, you know, things like that. And if your stress gets too high, you can, you know, develop negative traits.
Okay.
And then when you get to the bunker, similar to the campfire in Darkest Dungeon, you have, you know, a certain number of points that the various characters can use to like heal, or, you know, use special abilities like, you know, I don't know, giving a pep talk to lower everyone's stress, or, you know, zeroing in their gun so that it does more damage the next map, things like that. The whole thing is wrapped up in a roguelike. So, you know, it's designed to do multiple runs, and, you know, when you die, you know, when your party gets wiped out, or if the automaton that's coming with you gets killed, it's game over. You start over at the beginning. However, by completing achievements, you can, you know, unlock new things.
So is there any genre that this game is not?
Not that I have found yet. I'm sure any missing genres will be fixed in the DLC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm surprised this isn't early access, at least not currently. No. Yeah.
Oh, it's just out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Who does that?
It's not the done thing, and out very recently as well. I mean, the concept for the game and the concept for the name sound kind of the same, which is, I don't know, man, just everything.
I would say, oh, gone.
No, but I was gonna say like none of these things sound contradictory to each other, and like the video that I'm seeing looks pretty rad, actually. So, like, does this hang together? Like, is this good?
Yeah, I think what it all comes together to mean is basically it's XCOM with a greater emphasis on like attrition between battles.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So one of the other things is like, in order to heal or craft grenades, you know, things like that, you have to search in marked areas on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get, you know, like scraps and medical supplies of food, stuff like that. So, you know, you also have limited resources. And it's very much, you don't have to kill everything. You just have to get to the next, you know, the next bunker. So, okay. Yeah, it's kind of, I would say, an XCOM that focuses much more on, you know, managing, you know, resources, and much more on keeping on the move.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested by just the hordes of rats that are on screen at once, because that's like, you know, a bunch of enemies does not usually lend itself very well to a turn-based strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, you know, XCOM 2 did some stuff with the horde in the expansion, And it just led to a lot of turns where you feel like you're just waiting and waiting and waiting for every enemy to take their turn. So how does it handle that? And like, do your soldiers' skills kind of correspond to the fact that you're fighting hordes more than individual foes?
Yeah. So it's hard to know how much of it is like just, you know, me falling into the strategies that I like from XCOM. But I've been building very heavily around Overwatch.
Okay.
And you can get things. One of the unique mechanics is this is very much a steampunk world. So instead of your weapons having ammunition, they build up heat. And then once their heat is completely full, you can either vent them or you can just keep shooting, but you'll do damage to yourself as well.
Oh, cool.
But there's a whole bunch of abilities that either give you free shots or like my current automaton, its special ability is any character that's next to them doesn't build up heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can do things where I think like my sniper on a full round Overwatch gets like 4 Overwatch shots, and each of them is enough to take on or take down like most common enemies.
Nice.
Similarly, I have a character that is a katana specialist, and her ability is basically she can sort of get a free movement action that ends a melee attack. And then one of her level abilities you can level up over time. Basically, when you kill an enemy with that, it refunds your action points, but decreases your move distance by 2. So you can basically, you know, build her to just be able to like run back and forth between a group of enemies and take everyone out.
Nice, yeah. And much more relevant when you are more frequently encountering large groups of enemies.
Right, exactly. The other thing they have is the super rare consumable are fusion cores, which you can use to revive your automaton if it gets taken out, and also to basically instantly make horde timers and so, like, at the end of the level, it takes several rounds for the bunker to open up, or you can just use a fusion core. However, you can also use it to basically just, like, open it up and more or less force lightnings, like, a whole crowd of enemies.
Nice.
So, yeah, so there definitely are things like that. It feels to me like the abilities are, I guess, kind of scale much higher, particularly in terms of like raw number of attacks, things like that.
Does that make turns just take forever to play out, or is it still pretty snappy?
Still seems pretty snappy. You can basically do two actions, either 2 attacks, 2 moves or whatever. And a lot of the rest of the stuff happens, at least semi-automatically. So at least so far, I haven't had much slowdown. That could change as I get farther into the game, though.
Since it says it's like an RPG, what's like the progression like for the individual characters? Like, how do you upgrade them?
Yeah, so you basically, the characters gain levels, they get a certain amount of experience each mission, each combat, and then some bonus experience if they got the most kills, and some bonus experience if they got the most loots.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's fairly basic in terms of that, but then when they level up, they gain a point of hit points, and then also get a skill upgrade, and each skill can be upgraded like 3 times or something like that. So if you die, all of that resets. However, the actual unlocking of those skills and things like that stays. Okay. There's also a whole bunch of things where performing certain actions results in what they call like combat tactics. So, for example, if two characters are side by side and go into Overwatch mode, they will both get plus 20% hit.
Like they're covering one another or something? Is that the idea?
Yeah, yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. So, or
they can't be outdone by the other guy.
Yeah.
Or similarly, like if two enemies, or if two characters, hunker down, so like go full defensive next to each other, they'll heal a little bit of stress. Those are the main ones I've unlocked so far. It's implied that there's one for, I think, if you like revive an enemy and then immediately have them get a kill. You know, things like that. So yeah, there's a lot in the game. But yeah, the last thing I'd say is that all of the characters are, there's not, you know, I guess classes so much as there's different characters. So each member of your team has completely different, abilities, which is kind of cool.
But it's kind of like open-ended, which like stats you want to upgrade, but like their abilities make it more that one's conducive to certain...
Well, so the stats you can upgrade are completely different. So, yeah. Okay. Like the katana specialist has abilities that has that ability that basically gives them extra attacks. Mm-hmm. Likewise, they get movement abilities, whereas there's a character that's a military veteran who is better at like finding ammo stockpiles. There's a character that's kind of your leader ability, and he gets a whole bunch of party buffs.
Gotcha. So you're only upgrading like skills. There's not like strength or defense or anything like that you're upgrading.
No, not usually. You know, some of the skills end up just being like, you know, I don't know, plus 1 to HP or things like that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, no, they're mostly active.
Okay.
It's a kind of a small numbers game. You start most characters with like 5 HP. And this is just an estimate from like the types of bonuses I've seen around. It looks to me like probably the max you could get on a character if you just, you know, had everything going for him is probably in the neighborhood of 20 HP.
Okay.
So yeah, you know, it's that makes it very easy to die.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's a really cool game, really, really well animated. My only complaint is that from the name Verminfall, it is not in fact a game about you know, just rats raining from the sky. But
I've decided that I kind of really don't like the name.
Yeah,
is it the Shard Punk or the Verminfall?
The whole thing, it just like what David is describing sounds cooler than the name would allow for it. The name sounds like a gag to me.
Yeah, what I wonder is one of the resources you pick up is shards.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing I found you can use them for, maybe the only thing, is to craft grenades. I kind of wonder if at some point they thought, you know, planned on like the technology and stuff like that revolving around that more heavily. And yeah. Then just the name stuck, even though the kind of world building went somewhere else.
Right.
See, I think it is a situation where like someone on the dev team has a 600-page manuscript on the world building for Shard Punk, and they've got a whole idea of it being this, what is the word for it? Marvel's shared universe or whatever. Mm-hmm. And this is the first entry in it. And so it's started, they've been on it so long, it's made sense to them. They just don't realize that it doesn't make sense to anyone else.
It's a little conspiratorial. A little conspiratorial. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically what we do, right?
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of vermin fall being like the first stage. Then you get like a vermin flood, and then you get vermin tides at the end.
Hmm. Oh, I thought maybe like vermin fall was the first one. That's vermin winter, then vermin spring.
Okay.
Huh. Well, I had never heard about this game before.
Yeah. At least so far, I highly recommend it. It's a lot of fun, and it's like $12.
Yeah. That sounds like there's a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, Shardtide Verminpunk.
No, exactly. Shardpunk Vermintide. People like when we say the name at the end of the thing.
That's what I said. Tide Punk Verminfall.
Do you have anything else, David?
No, I do not. Although I do have a game I want to pitch to you that I think you should consider check out. Have you seen Shadows of Doubt?
Yeah, I am. That's on my short list to stream the next time I do a non-horror stream. Yeah,
nice
procedural open world mystery game.
Yep. Deus Ex style. Yep.
Yep. Looks rad. Just came out like today or yesterday or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good catch though. Nice. Dennis, round us out. What you've been playing?
Yeah, so DMZ is dead to me.
I was gone 1 week. What happened?
Oh man, they basically released a pay to win skin and data leaked on a series of progressively worse pay to win skins.
Oh no.
Yeah, so my one bit of catharsis is that some of the new stuff that they introduced in season three that, you know, I was on record being like, okay, season three looks pretty cool. And then they did the pay to win thing. Some of the stuff they released in season three is getting abused by the player base to make the game like way more hostile.
Hmm.
And when the UAV pay to win skin releases, it's going to make that exponentially worse. And so it's like, man, like these pay-to-win skins are going to ruin the game so hard that just the anticipation of them showing up and like these other seemingly unrelated changes are ruining the game. So
yeah.
Happy to be out on it right now. Maybe they'll get it back to a playable state. Maybe they'll get it, you know, get it back to a healthy place. I don't know. But in that void, I had to insert some AAA forever shooter with a questionable company behind it. Well, I did if I wanted to hang out with my buddy that I played DMZ with.
Okay,
you know?
Okay, yeah, there we go. That makes sense.
He's got a DMZ shaped hole in his heart right now.
Yes, and my friend was filling it.
Sorry.
No, he's gonna pop a UAV when I get close. That's dumb. So anyway, my buddy was playing Destiny 2 and convinced me to go back to it. Yeah, and this is a different game than I played at launch.
When was the last time you played it?
At launch.
Oh.
Yeah, so I was the sucker that saw Destiny getting into a pretty good place when they were going to launch Destiny 2 and was like, oh, well, they probably worked out all the kinks with Destiny, and Destiny 2 will launch in great shape, and this can just be my forever shooter. So I bought the $80 deluxe version with all the special stuff and the next two DLCs and yada yada. And they did not launch in excellent shape. They had no idea what the hell to do with the game. And it was kind of a big nothing burger. Like, there really was not much to do in the original Destiny 2. So I felt really jilted. The two expansions were even emptier than the main game.
Mm.
And then, you know, the third expansion onward, where they kind of started to figure themselves out, I didn't get those because I didn't pay for it. Apparently I should have gotten the $120 version instead of the $80 version or whatever. Yeah. So I felt very jilted. I walked away from Destiny 2, for a long time. A ton of changes have happened since, I think all of the content that I had paid for is either free to play or just doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, got seasoned like, out.
They got me bad. But the new stuff is built on the same mechanics that the old stuff was, and a bungee shooter is still going to be a bungee shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So this game just feels good to play.
So what is the pitch for this season?
Neptunian fuckboy.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure, although I think the character is non-binary, but I guess there's a whole bunch of proper nouns that I don't recognize, that are fighting each other.
You're playing Destiny, dude.
Yeah. This is peak Destiny. Yeah. And I haven't followed the story at all since launch. So there's six factions that I've never heard of before, and all of them have like seven or eight, names that they're dropping that feel like, it was a big reveal.
Yeah. Like all a full half the bad guys are good guys now.
Yeah. Like what? And they decide they want to race to Neptune to, get some MacGuffin. So, you know, you go to Neptune and there is a fully developed city and society living on Neptune that no one was aware of. How that works when everyone is zipping around the galaxy like it's no big deal, I don't know. But the people on Neptune are all like giant sized, and all very scantily clad and jovial. So, it is like the Asgard of Destiny. And it is, yeah, I could not tell you what's going on beyond that. But, you know, there's the intro mission. So like the mission it drops you into at the start is the same one that I remember from before. And you know, it kind of eases you in.
As a side note, is it Crow you're talking about?
No, Nessus? Maybe Nessus?
I mean, yeah, that I don't know.
Let me see. I think his name is Nessus.
My rule with Destiny is that, you know, it has hurt me a lot that I now have to pretend that I don't care a great deal about the storyline.
No, okay, so Nessus is a planet. Again, so many proper nouns.
You're up on your microphone quite close, but...
Oh, sorry.
It's exciting about Destiny, right? Just,
how? Sorry. I'm sorry. I don't... Yeah. That's not cool of me. Sorry.
No, you're good. It's... I don't know what's going on with the story. It is fun shooting. It's fun to run around with the buddy. Basically, the campaign is gone. Like, there's a very short tutorial on ramp, and then it's straight into kind of like all the weekly quest kind of stuff. Which gives you an excuse to zip around and try all the different corners of the game, because you can get special rewards if you do a couple things in multiplayer, if you do a couple things in the raid-ish stuff, if you do a couple things in random patrols, and it always feels like you're building towards something. It's really easy to hop on with a buddy and he's like, hey, I got a bunch of quests for scout rifles. And you're like, well, great, I got to do a raid. And so you hop into a raid with scout rifles equipped and go to town. It's been a good way to, you know, excuse to hang out with someone and chat while you're shooting aliens.
Have they got you doing any interesting, cool or new stuff compared to when you played it at launch, like mission types or, you know, more involved kinds of enemies, things like that, like outside of like raid stuff, which is, I know the way that this generally articulates, like that's where any game like this hides their cool stuff.
Yeah. Nope. Not even slightly. You know, there's new factions that you're fighting against. There are technically like new weapon types, but it's all the same stuff. You know, like it's point and shoot, and then do that again, I guess.
I mean, the previous season added like pirate treasure hunts on spaceships. Sorry, when I say spaceships, I mean literally ships in space.
Okay.
I haven't seen that yet. So maybe there's some stuff I still haven't uncovered. The one notable new thing is Gambit mode, and that wasn't around.
Yes,
Mon Cher.
Yeah, what? Gambit
like,
from
like X-Men. Gambit. Yeah,
We're working real hard to get each other's jokes this week.
It's a real, we're making it sound hard.
Also, I love that you drop into a game and within 5 minutes find the PvEvP mode.
Yep. Yeah, so that's what it is. Is like you're on a team of four. There's another team of four. You're both clearing your various arenas of AI bots. And you know, when the enemies die, they drop these motes that you can deposit in a bank. Dr. Mario style, that if you deposit enough at once, it will drop, you know, tough enemies on the other team. You also then at intervals can jump through a portal into the other team's area and shoot them up to try to distract them or, you know, steal their motes, etc. And then, you know, at the end of it, you summon a big boss and you race to kill the boss before the other team can summon and kill their boss. So yeah, really, really cool, kind of less direct, multiplayer experience. I appreciate that. It feels to me like there's a ton of rubber banding in it though. So, you know, one team will get the boss up way ahead of the other team. But then the team that's behind seems to get easier enemies, or, you know, maybe because the leading team is fighting the boss and not sending blocker enemies over anymore, it's easier to finish up. But it just always feels like no matter how the early game goes, you wind up kind of neck and neck at the end. And then it's kind of, I don't know, feels a bit like a coin flip at the end just because everyone winds up close.
Yeah.
So I see the design intent there, which is like, hey, you can always come back. Like, it always feels close and exciting. But when it's so manufactured to be that way, it loses a bit of its sheen. Like, yeah. I want to be able to blow someone out in this game, and I haven't been able to yet.
Yeah. You get that Mario Kart flattening that goes on.
Mm-hmm. But man, does it feel good to invade the other team's space and to take out, you know, the entire team before jumping back. Like, it's got its own kind of hero moments to it. But yeah, it is the PvPvE mode of Destiny.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Drifter?
Oh man, nails on a chalkboard.
Really?
Yeah, he's just a little too cowboy for me. Yeah, he's like, "Rad man, let's see, flip a coin, see who's there." Rawr. You know.
See, I love his interactions with Eris Morn are really funny.
Oh, that would require me to know who that was. Where that is?
That's the gothy space witch.
Okay.
Basically him and the like most emo serious character in the game kind of have a shipping thing going on.
Okay. I don't know if he didn't sound so much like Dr. Teeth from the Muppets. Maybe I could like him.
Yeah,
more.
I can see that.
Yeah, I got no more questions about Destiny.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's filling the DMZ hole in my heart and allowing me to hang out with the friends that, you know, I'll derp around with in a game.
Yeah.
Just to hang out. So
it's a social activity. I get it.
Yeah. Another game that I've turned into a social activity, though, I have an update on Slay the Spire.
Ooh. Oh.
Specifically the Slay by Comment run that I've been doing on Reddit, where, you know, every day I post where I'm at in the game, and then whatever comment is most upvoted is the action that I take.
Okay.
This has been going on now for 130 days just for this run.
Wow.
It's close to 200 days when you factor in like the previous run, which I died in, and we have reached the final boss. So we've gotten through Act 4 and are on the Heart.
Wow.
For anyone familiar with it. Yes.
The stakes are high.
What's the stakes? Build?
It is a corruption ironclad build. Okay. We lucked into ice cream late in the game, which lets you keep your mana turn over turn. And so basically the deck is designed to power up while exhausting all the cards that are powering you up, and until you're left with just one or two really strong attacks that you then just spam for massive damage.
Okay.
And it does that very effectively, to the point that the heart, which is notably like a challenge boss, and infamously difficult, there, the discussions right now are like, what is the meme-y way we're going to kill this? So the community is firmly in control of the battle. We're trying to perfect it, so take no damage whatsoever. And people are like, oh, I don't know. We might only be able to finish with full health after healing back up, rather than just never take damage in the first place. I don't know if we can do this. Like that's the level of overpowered we've gotten to.
That's pretty confident from like a play by post point of view.
Yeah. I mean, the community that has coalesced around, this run is incredible. And, you know, it makes sense. Like this forum is where some of the better players, hang out.
Yeah.
And they are given a day to analyze the best possible move.
Okay.
For everyone. So last run with the defect, I think people were kind of like, oh, this is jokey, meme-y, like not taking it seriously. And so we got killed. But then I think by that point, people started to realize like, oh, he's actually going to like stick around and post this every day. Okay. All right. Let's do this.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've been absolutely raffle stomping the enemies. So yeah, I think there's a line on the table now. So there's a relic that we found in both runs called Frozen Eye that lets you see your draw pile in order. Mm-hmm. And that alone has cut the time for this run in half.
Oh, I would have thought that it would expand it, actually.
Normally it does. So normal players, it's like, I could take Frozen Eye. I know it's powerful because I have perfect information now, but I don't want to spend that long on it. When you literally have a full day to analyze every single move.
Right. Okay.
You can like, it's super helpful.
It almost passes like a static friction point or something like
yes.
that. Yeah.
So can you do multiple turns in a row then with that?
Sometimes. Yeah. If there's a reshuffle, you kind of have to stop. If there's randomness to the enemy's attack pattern, which sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't, you have to stop and see what happens with that randomness. And then there's other things like if you have status cards inserted into the deck, that'll change the draw order. It's kind of incredible. Like people who make recommendations will occasionally use like conditional, like if then branches and stuff. But for the most part, the community has been really good about just keeping it simple and straightforward lines. And if there's a big decision point, we'll kind of break for the day and see what comes next.
Have there been any like controversies in the run where it's like half the people want to do one thing and the other half want to do a different thing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of specific examples. The interesting thing is, because like something posted earlier in the day gets more views and potentially more upvotes, then there's a bit of this race that happens where like there will be one most popular line and then someone will be like, oh my God, I calculated it out to the 1000th percent and this is slightly better. Like we can save our buffer here, or we don't have to use a potion this turn if we do X, Y, and Z. And then there's this like giant push from the people like, everyone go upvote this other line, downvote the line.
Top first. Edited and be like, upvote this instead.
Well, I had to put rules in place around edits. Like you can edit to clarify, but if you change something, you have to make it a new comment, and you can edit your old comment to link to the new comment.
Right.
You can't delete the original comment.
Huh.
Nice.
Cause people might vote for that earnestly wanting it and be mad, but people have been so cool about this. Anyway, the current, options on the table for winning, that people are deciding between, there's a card called Clash, which is kind of considered the noob trap card. So it's a strong attack, but you can only play it if you only have attacks in your hand. And the further you get in the game, the less likely that is. And so it's a game that you take early on. It's like, oh, this is powerful. And then it winds up just being a dead card, towards the end of the game. Someone in the community convinced everyone to take that for our deck. And it's actually been kind of MVP. Like it's done really well. And so I'm very proud that we're kind of, technically we are winning with a meme deck. One line literally plays that card, I think 5 or 6 times in a row to win.
Huh.
And just, we have so much HP at this point, we can tank the hits and just like, I'm going to kill you with Clash and Clash only. And then the other one is there's a card called Feed, which if you kill an enemy with it, you get some extra max HP. And every time that the community has played Feed, I have written like a little review of what the enemy tastes like. So there's we have a head chef that has done a tier list of everything and keeps a record of it. They also became our chief justice because we needed a Supreme Court. Don't ask to enforce the laws of Slay by Comment. And so they are the head chief slash chef justice. Anyway, so yeah, it's a whole thing, but we could play Feed to Kill the Heart. And that would also be fun because then I would write up what it tastes like.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been a delight. I'm definitely going to do, a third run. Well, I shouldn't say that. It seems like there's appetite for it in the community. And if the final instruction says start a new run, I will start a new run.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
So, I mean, you could always jump to like a monster train or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Just randomly start posting from a different game.
Get immediately scuttled by the mods.
Mm-hmm. Actually. So, there's another person that does a daily post. That's just like a discussion thread for every card. And they're going through alphabetically the whole list of cards. Mm-hmm. So for April Fool's Day, I did their post and they did my post.
Oh yeah.
Nice.
So that was fun. Like it's a really cool community and, I'm so happy that it's gone so well.
Nice.
Yeah. So, we are by this time next week, I think I'll be able to report on actually winning our first run of Slay by Comment.
Hmm. Well, congratulations. Prematurely.
Thank you. The fact that I don't think we can lose.
Yeah. It sounds like you've got enough firepower on your side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Nice.
Famous last words.
Knocking on my desk here. You got anything else?
No, that's the big stuff.
All right.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
I asked them about good vibes after my DMZ meltdown last week. I want to know, what is the best example of a developer actually listening to its players and making changes accordingly?
Yeah, I'll get started with...
So you're not talking about the good touch from Borderlands 2.
Who, what, what?
Never. Do I have to cut this out? I don't know what this is.
I don't either.
Okay.
I'm scared. I'm scared.
That is there, the theme there, of this
there
week's
was
episode.
There was a gun in Borderlands 2 called the Good Touch that just makes your... as long as you have it equipped, your controller's rumble feature just goes constantly.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, I will start us off here with Jeremy, who says it's not really a game related, but the game adaptation of a video game for movies or series, game adaptations of video games or movies have been getting a lot better over the years. Sonic, Mario, and The Last of Us, much better than the old Mario movie, for example. I haven't seen the new Mario movie, but nothing will make the old Mario movie obsolete. Sorry.
Yeah, I
note that you didn't say nothing will make the old Mario movie bad.
Nothing will make the old Mario movie bad. It's a good movie.
When the movie is released obsolete, you cannot make it obsolete. You know what I'm saying?
I was born in the dark.
I am a defender of the OG Mario movie. Yeah.
They took a big swing with it. It's respectable in that sense.
Yeah.
I've got to say, though, I didn't consider this angle, but I've got to agree. I know I definitely feel that way about like the D&D movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and think about the Sonic movie where they completely redid the character. Like
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up as like a solid example of this is like instead of doubling down on a backlash or whatever, they, you know, went in with it. Although that original model, like what a ballsy move it would be to release a movie with that fucking thing in those teeth as the lead.
He's in the live action Chippendale movie.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They make an alternate Sonic horror movie with that model.
Oh,
gotta go fast.
Let's see here. Ben, what does Peter say?
Peter says, this one feels like a gimme, but Elden Ring is the first FromSoft game that I've actually played from release onwards. However, based on everything I've seen, the repeated patches and balancing has been amazing. Everything from the changes to the Sword of Night and Flame Ice Rind Hatchet to the Rise and Fall of Rivers of Blood, and so on.
This is really good. In fact, I think the biggest like version of this is something that is really wonky and hard to appreciate if you're not in it. Prior to Elden Ring and even early on in Elden Ring's release, FromSoft was kind of doing this eternal balancing act of balancing the game and making changes to weapons that were overpowered or underpowered in PvP, with kinda no mind to what this would do for, like, I don't know, the one or two weapons that were especially viable for people who are just playing PvE, you know? Mm-hmm. And Elden Ring, they split it. And so there are just different stats and different adjustments that are made for PvP or for PvE. And that is 100% the way that it ought to go. That way everybody gets what they want.
I hate PvP in Souls games so very much.
Yeah, but there are lots of people who don't. And
yeah, there's a lot of psychopaths in the world.
And I'm very happy that those people who like that thing are no longer affecting my PvE builds, you know, making them suddenly like non-viable in the middle of a run. Like,
I just want to know who they are so that I can never turn my back on them.
I mean, depending on the latency.
Too bad, leg means you already have.
Yes. David, what does David say?
David says, Wizards of the Coast eventually backtracking on their OGL. It's not video games, but it's damn close. I listened to a ton of Real Play podcasts, and it was an interesting time listening to each of them backtracking on whether they were D&D or not, and several just changing to Pathfinder or other tabletop RPGs.
One of my favorite details that came out of that was the Pathfinder company coming out with their own version of the OGL, calling it the ORC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So does that mean there's now a OGL?
it's the OGRE, the OG re-release. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That barely works. Man, did you see that? I didn't bring the story because I wanted to bring a more positive one. But did you see that Wizards hired the fucking Pinkertons to go to a YouTube creator?
Oh, no, that's my story.
Oh, okay, cool. Well,
yeah, you can never escape it, Cole.
Okay, no, I will. Let's take that, strike that. Dennis.
I don't know. I thought it was funny.
Strike Dennis. The swoop from the record.
No, you
strike the swoop.
All right. At least that's decided.
Oh God.
Dennis, what does Keck just say?
Oh, let me compose myself. They say struggling on that one, unfortunately. Struggling on the question. I can think of examples, but they were just fine. Warframe might be the one of the best, but I just know that from hearing players. I don't play Warframe.
Why not?
David, cue your thoughts.
Honestly, I'm not aware of like times when Warframe has tried to do a thing and then massively changed. It just seems like Warframe more just kind of does whatever pops into their heads. Mm-hmm. But I would not be surprised that if that was the case. And I do think there were some pretty significant changes from like the first release. However, that was before I really got into it.
Fair enough. And I left it vague where it, not necessarily them revising things, but them, you know, incorporating feedback.
Definitely do that. Mm-hmm. Also, yeah. Try Warframe.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I'll read the last one here. Sam says, it's been discussed exhaustively on the level, but I was playing No Man's Sky earlier today, and I can't think of a better answer than that. They must have
it into actually some man's sky.
They must have like some kind of just like necromancer bone bag that occasionally fills up with money. Like their yep. business model is baffling and should probably be investigated by the SEC.
I really like that. I think some of the plot line they eventually added though is just passive aggressively referencing the the whole controversy.
Oh yeah, probably. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because there's a whole thing about like, oh, I gave you the universe and that wasn't enough, you know, that sort of thing.
Looks into camera.
They've put in enough work to where they can work in a little how you like me now kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, it's an interesting place to be mentally. It has to be that you are eternally the poster child for like, hey, you were a massive fuck up, but you're pretty good now.
It's kind of hard to look at them. You know, like nobody, whenever people talk about Final Fantasy XIV, nobody talks about their fuck up of a launch except in relation to how much they turned it around. You know, like that is not the stink that is on them. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So good. You know, if you do the work, you can work out of a reputational hole. It is good to see that. I'm sure there are some weirdos because there are always weirdos, but
it's the internet. I mean, there's always weirdos.
I'm going to be honest. I still haven't forgiven them. They still shipped a broken ass game. They did. A bunch of money.
Are we talking about No Man's Sky or Final Fantasy?
I don't know Final Fantasy, but probably either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, No Man's Sky, I just think they, you know, shipped an existentially horrifying game.
Where you find there's nothing in the universe.
Yep.
For my example, I'm going to say the Dark Picture anthology, Supermassive. Mm-hmm. And this can extend to like Until Dawn and The Quarry, because all of these games are kind of existing in the same kind of run together. Like no two of them have handled QTEs in the same way. Like they're constantly trying to like advance those things. Like it is a studio that is kind of always got its ear to the ground when it comes to trying to refine how to make these cinematic adventure games based on horror tropes, right? Like it doesn't always move in the right direction. See my pervasive complaints about what is it? The Devil in Me, the most recent of the Dark Pictures anthology. But like, it's really good to see a studio, not just with a model that allows that kind of iteration, but one that, they're willing to use that flexibility. Right. Ben, how about you?
Mine's hot off the presses, and I'm saying this one, it doesn't bump into my news story, but, the developers behind Storybook Brawl are finally listening to all the people who left the game, who asked that they take crypto out of the game. Okay. They decided to improve the game by having it shut down at the beginning of May.
Oh!
They just announced today that the game's going to shut down. Servers are going to shut down for it within a month. So.
Huh. Is that because the company that owns them is FTX?
Yeah. So sorry to the devs at the company. Rest in piss, all the people who sold the game to FTX.
Like, yeah, they got their exit. I mean, they got their own parachute.
They cashed out.
Yeah.
Unless they kept it in crypto, in which case,
lol. Yeah. Oh, that's shame on them. It's all shame on them.
I have since rejoined the Discord server to see like what how the people are handling it. Still a shit ton of crypto bros on that place, man.
Fine. And,
like, it's weird seeing toxic positivity in earnest. It's like, oh.
This only failed because you guys didn't have faith in the project.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, it is fucking assholes. Twitter blue motherfuckers.
I love not to tangent on that, but so many people are having to come out and be like, I did not pay for Twitter Blue.
Yeah.
please don't imply that I did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, there's now some talk that Twitter might get sued for. Oh, yeah.
It's false endorsement laws. You know, yep. I've got no idea if those will actually hold up in court, but it's fun that they'll have to pay to find out.
Anyways, we don't need to talk about the Musk.
Yeah. Fucking asshole. Go to hell. That guy should. David,
I agree on that sentence.
David, how about you? Listener, developers listening to their audience.
I think I'd go with Cyberpunk 2077, where they basically realized that their game sucked and we should make an anime instead, and it was great anime.
I like the backhanded answers we're giving this time.
Yeah,
a lot of spiciness here.
Talk about a game that's not gonna outlive its. I just really don't think that game is going to be anything other than a failure, no matter how much work they do on it.
I met someone recently. Was talking to someone recently that I really respect that apparently loves the game. So maybe it's gotten a lot better, but I don't know.
Oh, it's totally possible. Go ahead, Ben.
At least people got their money back with that game.
True. Yeah. Mm. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, my answer was going to be No Man's Sky. So.
Oh, yeah.
I guess backup answer, Minecraft Dungeons. And I have to be intentional because now there's Minecraft Legends.
That game looks rad. I
have not played yet, but yeah.
My finger's constantly hovering over the install on that in Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, Minecraft Dungeons, when they implemented battle passes, they did it so that they never expire and you can just select which one you want to be advancing. So nice of them, you know, if you're going to go to that kind of model to make it a very relaxed experience rather than, oh, I have to play this enough to get all the stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I really want someone to explain the like model behind the live service thing, because it seems to me the ideal scenario is not I play every day, it's I pay and then don't play every day. So like letting me pay and then like procrastinate on when I actually play the season pass seems great.
No. If there was someone who taught a class on the business of video games, they could probably comment on that.
Yeah. Too bad we don't have anybody like that here. So
we will. It's all about stability. It's all about predictability and income. So seasonal service model means you're subscribed and you're having income coming in regularly.
Wait a minute. So you mean subscribers lets you budget for stuff like having a producer on board?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Good to know. I'll make a note for that. Oh, man. Well, thank you, folks, for writing in. More good news out there than I expected there to be, except from us. Two out of the four here were...
We are dead inside.
Well, not dead inside, just dancing on graves, I think. but yes, if you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to Facebook, do a search for Duck Feed Community, watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. I will say, if you are trying to get into the group, it is a private, I don't know if it's a private group. It's restricted to where you've got to answer like questions and prompts. If you're not going to answer the questions and the prompts there, like confirm that you read the stuff, I'm not going to let you in. There's like an automatic rule and stuff like that. So just make sure you do that. It takes a couple of seconds just as a heads up. Had a few people just be like, ah, no, don't need to. Doesn't bode well for rule following, I would say.
Yeah. There's some self-filtering going on there.
Yes. Yeah. So just letting you know, there's a little thing just like when you join any Facebook group. Thank you, Janice, for posting the question.
Mm-hmm. The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games, oftentimes that are exciting to us. I'm going to start off with an exciting one. There's more happening in the labor organization movement at a larger studio. Some workers at Sega, at their Irvine office, Sega of America, they have formed I believe it is the video games industries. It is one of their first cross departmental unions that they are trying to get off the ground, that they have declared. It is Aegis, which is the Allied Employees Guild Improving Sega. Most other video game unionization efforts have started in QA departments or have been kind of relegated to a single department. This one is spanning across multiple different kind of disciplines.
They had to unionize fast.
Yeah, Yeah. Well, you know, it gets a bit, it is better, but it is also more complicated because you are working with different, let's say, silos and management, and also negotiating, you know, the compensation needs and like work condition needs are different between, like, let's say, you know, QA and production, right? Just different jobs. But the overall goal seems to be for standardization of pay and generally changing conditions so that people can, I don't know, rely on having a job at the company for more than a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Basically, a push across the game unionization effort has been for a move away from the Hollywood model, where people are brought en masse in order to, you know, complete a project and then just let go as soon as the thing goes gold or gets close to it in order to go find their next project, making the argument that if people can count on being with the company for a while, they will be loyal and probably do better work. So mm-hmm. This is along with demands for, you know, more adequate staffing, better timelines, and just general quality of life kind of stuff, to end patterns of overwork, which is an endemic problem across the entire industry. I wish them a huge amount of success as they try to get this going. And man, just continue this tide, baby. Keep this rolling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't even know if there's more to say about it, because obviously this is just a declaration of intent. They have the majority of the roles, you know, they've got the votes necessary to get the process started. But we will see what happens as they go up against management. There is little indication of how the American side of the business will, you know, has been responding to this. Although part of the kind of initiation for this had to do with Sega of Japan doing something that a lot of game companies, companies in general over there have been doing, which is unbidden raising salaries in order to kind of address kind of wide sweeping just labor morale problems mm-hmm. across there, kind of doing like
address the fact that they had not been keeping up with where they should be.
Yes. Yeah. Because like their leader, I believe, I'm not going to say good things. Yeah, I don't even know who it was, but like when the government said, hey, this is probably a problem that we're not paying people what they're worth in relation to how much it costs to live. Especially when we are expecting them to work in these cities that are incredibly expensive to live in. The company has actually listened and said, oh yeah, it's probably good if our employees have, you know, just a little bit more slack in general. And then they listened. That is not a part of our culture over here. Our culture is to work people and starve them and make it so they have to live as far away from the city where they work as possible.
You don't want to starve them if that interferes with their working. You just want to feed them enough so that they can work.
Yeah, you don't want to feed them so much that they've got a lot of willpower.
That's true.
It low protein, you know. Oh man. Yeah, that's my story. I just rat as hell. I always do a tiny little fist bump when I see one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. let's see. Hey, hey, Dennis, speaking of weird working conditions, what's a lot of the work happening at Sony amounting to?
Yeah. So this is a more positive story than it seems from the headline, I will say. It's an interesting peek behind the curtain of how things work at Sony in terms of developing games. Shuhei Yoshida, you know, was president of Sony Interactive through 2019. He isn't anymore, but he's still very involved in the development of games there. And he talked about the fact that they actually cancel a lot of games projects before they ever see the light of day. You know, the teams there, the devs there are prototyping and developing ideas constantly. And they want those people to be able to take risks and try out their things and not just continually pump out the one sure thing, you know, live service game that the world is trending towards. And so in order to do that, they have kind of a system in place where, hey, you try lots of things, let's prototype out lots of things, and we'll cancel lots of things as well. There's a lot of games that kind of get their prototype and you're like, ah, this isn't it. And rather than firing these people or sending them out to bay or potentially worse, just sticking them grinding on a project that you know isn't going to work, Sony is pretty good about pulling the ripcord on a bad project so that those people can shift their resources towards another new idea.
Was this?
I feel like this is very much putting a smiley face on, like, we're just going to have you work on a lot of worthless stuff over and over again.
Well, it's interesting. Again, going to like business models and stuff like that to have innovation and to have cool new ideas.
You have to exploit labor.
Well, I mean, okay. they're being compensated. It's just a matter of if it'll be released or not. You know?
Yeah. And there's, you know, feelings get hurt. You know, some people are working on their passion project and they really believe in the idea and you know, that you got to tell them, hey, sorry, this is not it. Like that can be complicated, but in general, I think it is actually a healthy thing to see a design process, whatever you want to call it, that allows for experimentation and more out there things without, you know, being devastated if it doesn't work out. Like to be innovative like that, you need to be able to fail on stuff, because otherwise you're always staying, you know, that far in from the boundary because you can't go over it.
Yeah. I mean, kind of similar, and maybe this is fraught because it's been a long time since I've been in industry, but like similar to, you know, what a lot of larger companies will do, which is a model of like startup within a blue chip kind of thing.
Oh yeah. No, I know someone who works in this industry. This does not sound like a positive thing to me.
Yeah.
This sounds like we want our employees to just constantly be, you know, passionate and rushing on these prototypes so that, you know, they're working more hours and no way.
Was this interview like in relation to a particular project? Like how did this information kind of come to light?
It was an interview with The Guardian. And he was talking in the context of embracing new ideas.
Gotcha.
So yeah, I mean, I don't have receipts to say that this is not a toxic thing. Mm-hmm. I don't have receipts to say that it is. I think it's an interesting peek behind the curtain to see like, hey, this is a method of developing that at least theoretically allows for more experimental stuff.
My guess would be that this is kind of more predominant than he is letting on, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of a model. Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of like most companies are going to have to operate this way or.
Yeah. Yeah. Just in terms of like, I don't know, cutting bait, you know, letting people figure out like, hey, is this thing going to be viable? There are a bunch of different ways to frame it and a bunch of different ways to implement it as well.
Yeah. I think what it comes down to is how do you reward people?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, so if it's a thing where like you only, you know, reward the ideas that ultimately, you know, win, then this really accomplishes nothing. On the other hand, if you're actually, you know, rewarding innovation and trying new things, you know, I could see that, but you're not doing that because you're a company.
Yeah, I've got no idea.
He says like the primary idea is to move people along when they're stuck. Like, hey, if this is getting to a place where you can't see a way to move forward, there's a mechanism to like, all right, go to the next thing.
Yeah. David, what's going on with that thing that I swooped earlier? And I'm sorry about it.
No problem.
The swoop was struck. You're fine.
Yeah. So a streamer, got a whole bunch of, booster packs for the next Magic the Gathering expansion.
Mm-hmm. Mom.
Releasing in 2 weeks, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, somehow got them earlier and, you know, I guess opened them up on stream. And then had the Pinkertons show up to their door because Wizards had sicked their thugs on them.
You mean the mercenary strike breakers? Do they have like a BioShock Infinite portal where they could just pull fucking Booker in to do this? I know the Pinkertons have been active. Like Amazon hired them, I believe, at some point. Like somehow that name is not Poison. and yeah. they can just continue going because large enough companies,
their customers are corporations. Like none of their history is a negative if you're a corporation.
Yeah.
They have the exact opposite emotional reaction. Like, oh, hey, the Pinkertons are still around. All right.
Oh, fuck yeah. Yeah. Let's go. Let's get them in. Let's
they have a long reputation.
Jesus.
So they apparently threatened to get the sheriff involved and that, you know, there could be hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines.
Yeah, they're going to fine up for $200,000. Yeah.
Yeah, in a decade in jail.
So they Nintendo'd him.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
What are the charges that they're threatening?
Oh, bullshit. Probably nothing, but you don't want to try and find out.
Yeah.
Yep.
So because the company mailed it to you without any kind of, I've got no idea if they gave any kind of term sheet about whether or not you're able to broadcast. I would say that's kind of a shame on you thing if they mailed it to an influencer and said, hey, don't put anything on here. By opening this, you accept that you're not going to broadcast about this before a certain date.
So my understanding, the speculation I saw is, I don't know, Magic the Gathering expansions all have silly names. This is apparently like Gobbledygook, the Awakening or whatever.
Super original,
And there was previously Gobbledygook expansion. And so, and the person who, the streamer said, the person who bought it from, he asked for the Gobbledygook cards. And so he thinks that just someone from Wizards just like shipped the wrong box by mistake.
This is literally just a transposition, like clerical thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So he returned it to Wizards and they apparently apologized and like, I don't know. I think I sent him a whole bunch of booster packs or something. But
the message is out.
Yeah. You know.
All right. So I looked up the names. March of the Machine, affectionately called Mom, is the one that's out right now. Apparently, the one that he might have maybe got was March of the Machine Aftermath, which is different set that they have. But makes sense why there would be confusion there.
Yeah. Man, they really Wizards of the Coast makes it really hard to want to say good things about a story set in the Forgotten Realms that has a mimic in it. Like, I've got so much fucking goodwill for the stuff that is around this. I understand D&D and Magic are separate things, but they are so related and it is the same company.
Not completely anymore.
I suppose there is that. Also, Lord of the Rings and I don't know, so many other things, all these crossovers that are that are happening there. Just like, man, they really ought to get somebody in charge of their corporate image because they can't keep being evil. No, they can't because
can't they?
It'd be super cool if they felt if they demonstrated any shame at all about it. But
yeah,
I would feel better about being a fan of D&D shit. You know.
Does it increase their profits if they feel shame about it?
Absolutely not.
Well,
can we find a way to make that happen?
Pretending they have how
do you feel about Revolution?
You can't feel shame if you're executed, though.
Well, you know. I mean, for a moment. Oh, man. Yeah. Bad move. Wizards that you're not going to be punished for at all.
Thank God they made nice with this guy versus Nintendoing it.
Yeah,
I still don't get how the Nintendo thing, like, how is that even illegal?
I mean, there are
other than just we live in a dystopia.
It's I don't know. It's a bigger topic than we can get into here with the time that we have left tonight. Mm-hmm. I would say it is really disappointing and fucked up what they are doing to Gary Bowser. Fucking hate it. Ben, rescue us. Both of these things that you have here are good news, and I'm in an uncertainty about which one to ask you about. So I'm just going to say, story, please.
Yeah, it's a short and sweet one. There's more content for Case of the Golden Idol coming out on the 27th, which is 2 days from when we record and 1 day before when this is released. So
badass.
Hooray! It's out.
What is Case of the Golden Idol again?
It's a game we've talked about many times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least two times.
Yeah.
It's a birthday game.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's the game that I got for Ben, and then Ben got for me because our birthdays are so close to each other. It's a mystery solving game. Compared it to Return like of the Oberdin.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So is it just one more? Is it like another chapter, like set of cases, or like do we have details about it?
I believe it's DLC, but this news was released very in an obfuscated way, where random pictures were sent to game companies, and like the pictures had different names on it and and had different images. So like to one company, it got sent a picture of like this monster holding a lantern, and it says April on the ceiling. And then another one, it's the same monster, but he's holding the lantern out to the side and says 27th. And then another one has like a clock, and the title of the file was Pacific. So it was like 10 o'clock Pacific time is what they assume is when it's going to come out.
But usual launch time for things on Steam. Yeah.
So, but it'll be a DLC. So I'm not sure how big it'll be or how much it'll be, since it has been, the information has come out in a very cryptic way.
I've said this about a few things today, but rad as hell. Yeah. I had no idea that that was even in the offing.
Is the dragon dude holding the lamp a current character that you've seen, or is this probably a new person for the DLC?
Well, I don't want to spoil too much about the game and the storyline of the game, but it fits in the world. So yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Man, people need to play that game. I'm trying to figure out a way to do it on WoF, where it's a problem because I've already played it and I know the solutions. How do I structure an episode to recreate the deduction process that I went through playing it?
Have somebody else play it who hasn't played it before and just commentate, I guess.
Huh. Yeah, it's actually a pretty good way to do it. Huh. Anyway, that game owns. I love it.
Yeah. What a great 1-2 punch between that and Pentiment coming out at the end of last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, here's the game of the year. It's maybe.
Yeah. Oh, by the time this episode comes out, we're doing Pentiment in June. It's episode 400 of WoF. Yeah.
Wait, so have you finished that game?
No, I've not finished it. No, I'm going to be starting it. I've got a couple more kind of ahead of it. I am down for a very stylistic narrative choice game about faith. That sounds cool to me. Again, said it too many times today. Rad as hell. So, nice. Well, I will be keeping an eye out for the Case of the Golden Idol DLC. Had no idea that was coming. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Enthusiasm. The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 455. We really appreciate you taking the time and tuning in. Someone's typing furiously. Getting your titles down.
Furiously.
I was trying to. I was trying to get something for the end in time, and there was an error.
Gotcha. Okay. No, don't worry. Didn't mean to make you self-conscious.
I'm going to mute and do the exact same thing I was doing.
Okay. No worries. I've got all the usual admin stuff. If you want to help the show, you know how you can. If you don't, then you can leave a rating or review. You can subscribe in your podcast directory of choice. You can become a member on Patreon in order to get all the bonus content that comes down. I don't talk about it an awful lot here, but like we have a bunch of bonus shows. Like at $5, you get a monthly show about horror movies that we do called Unfilmable. This month we talked about Silence of the Lambs, which obviously is a classic, but we felt like watching it anyway, and it was interesting and complicated to go back to, you know, given the gender stuff that they got wrong there, you know. It is a movie that fucks, but also is, I say that in a good way. It rules.
Do you want to fuck it?
Jesus. Yeah, no, it's a movie that's very good, but you know, you got feelings because you forget that it was made 30 plus years ago, which is wild to think. Yeah, so all that's available for you there. I'm giving Dennis time is the thing.
Is the stuff that's like wrong about it, like how they portray the killer, or is it the stuff with like how Clarice is treated?
So the stuff about how Clarice is treated, like it very much has, it's very intentional about that. Like it is against the way that others, you know, kind of treat her. And it does a very good job of putting the audience in her point of view.
Yeah.
To make you really empathize with the way things are stacked against her, you know, the stuff that is
close ups of males looking directly into the camera. Yes. Being very uncomfortable.
Yeah. it's just a matter of, but the way Buffalo Bill, is treated, yeah. You know, and
yeah.
The intentional ways that they tried to sidestep it that still ended up making it so the most memorable parts of the movie are things that are held against trans people to this very day. You know, that kind of stuff. So it's complicated. And that's kind of where we come down on it, because it'd be wild to say that it is not an effective film. But, you know, Dennis, what were you going to tell the nice people?
No, I was waiting for our sign offs.
Oh, OK. Is there anything I'm forgetting to promote?
I don't think so.
All right.
Oh, if you're going to be at Origins or Gen Con this year, let me know.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to be at Korg's in Columbus, coming up in I believe it's the second Saturday of May, let me know. I'm going to be there, retro game show kind of thing. Cool. I've been Cole Ross. You can catch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia, and I'm sorry, but as an AI language model, I don't have access to real-time information or specific context about individuals. Therefore, I can't provide you with the whereabouts of a specific person named Dennis Furia. Can you please provide me with more information or context so I can better understand your question and try to help you?
Is that what you're typing in? Were you asking ChatGPT how to sign off?
I was asking ChatGPT where they could find me.
Okay.
Boo. I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel. You can find me in Storybook Brawl Discord servers laughing.
Shot in food.
And stick around for some titles.
I don't think
it's coincidence that the German language has both a word for Schadenfreude and also the emptiness inside of something like a bicycle tire.
So it's got to be strike the swoop.
Yeah, I had that one. I think it's clearly going to be that one. Although I also had somebody's fetish. And a late one I had. Gonna mute and do the thing I was already doing.
I had a record number of titles this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I did have somebody's fetish. I had strike the swoop. It's the new bite the stees. I also had a moss in the crick.
Okay.
Jank recognized Jank. The OG OGL.
Okay.
And then got to unionize fast.
Yeah. The other one that I had was a crab first experience.
That's pretty good.
All right.
What you got, Ben?
The only one I had that wasn't said was chicken booification.
Cool. All right. Well, it's got to be strike the swoop.
Yep.
Cool. Well, it is
strike while that swoop is hot.
It is decided.